Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. It is the first week, of course, of where can I find a camp to put them into, or what do I do with them until I find a camp that opens on time? Joanna Fortune is with us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Give me all your questions about all the camps.
Yeah. And some answers too would be good too. I'm looking for advice on how to support my three-year-old with his intense angry outbursts. He's generally a happy, bright child who loves playing with others and struggles with the usual challenges at his age, like sharing and taking turns. The difficulty is that when things don't go his way, his reactions are very intense. He suddenly becomes extremely angry, cries, shouts loudly and grabs things from other children. These situations escalate quickly, and once they do, it's nearly impossible to return to calm play in the moment. I try to acknowledge what he's struggling with and help him navigate the situation fairly. But once the intensity kicks in, it feels like all I can do is prevent him from hurting others and remove him from the situation. I try to talk to him about it afterwards, but it doesn't seem to sink in. I'm also starting to wonder if I might be unintentionally reinforcing something, especially since his preschool haven't seen this side of him. I'd really appreciate some guidance on what I can do in these moments and how I can better equip him to manage these big feelings.
I mean, there's so much in here, Sean, that you're like, yeah, that's very three. Like some of our 3-year-olds, our toddlers are almost Teflon coated and it seems like nothing phases them. And then some of them are just deep feeling kids. And he sounds like a deep feeling kid to me, you know, so that's the intensity that this parent is writing about. But there's a couple of other things in here. Like I don't think it's unusual for a toddler to be emotionally dysregulated when it comes to things like they name sharing, taking turns or things not going their way. So little is within the sphere of control for toddlers. They rely on grown-ups for everything. So when they see little moments where they can exert control, it's not unusual for them to go full throttle at that. You know, well, hang on a second. I feel very strongly about the crusts being on or off my bread. And you can get this seemingly disproportionate over-the-top response. But really, it's a way of releasing a lot of pent-up energy or tension or frustration that they still at 3 years old don't have the emotional language to say, oh, well, here's what I'm actually thinking and feeling. So they use it in that way. So I know that's, you know, easy for me to say, and it's parentally very challenging to be in the firing line of. But just hold in mind that, you know, it's not quite over and above. It's definitely challenging, but it's in the range of a 3-year-old who might be a deep feeler. But the bit that's jumping out at me, Sean, is, you know, this bit that it's nearly impossible to return to calm play. Now, I don't know about you, but many 3-year-olds, calm play is the holy grail of play for them. Like, I don't know what this parent means by calm play, but for a 3-year-old and a 3-year-old who's prone to intense outbursts, I would be looking at increasing physical, active, rough and tumble, rolling around the place, lots of outdoor play, and trying to find ways that they can really move their bodies and expend that energy. And that in itself might achieve a state of regulation or calm, if you like. But he won't return to calm, even forget about calm play. If we want our children to calm, we're the calm. We have to check in with ourselves and say, am I calm enough to co-regulate this child back to calmness? And again, this parent is, I mean, in writing, it's all the right things. I do want to say that, but I try to acknowledge what he's struggling with and help him navigate the situation fairly. Again, I'm like, I'd love to know how you're doing that with a 3-year-old, because that's really difficult. And it might be because you're saying you try to talk to him about it afterwards. That might be where you're going wrong, because you might be relying on a lot of cognitive verbal direction, cognitive verbal regulation. And that's not how 3-year-olds work. That's not how their brains are developing yet. You would be better using sensory input, play, movement, doing rather than saying, to get him to a place of connection. And it is it's at any age, to be honest, but particularly at this age, it's connection to get correction. So if you want to correct the behavior, go to the emotional connection, get that in there, get that right. And then you will be able to bring, not that he won't go into these states, but you will be better able to catch him match him and bring him down to where you want him to be, so that as the parent, you're in the driving seat. Now, I do think this parent saying, you know, I might be unintentionally reinforcing something. Don't be taking on too much guilt or responsibility here. He's being three. Like, honestly, don't be beating yourself up about, oh, it's something you're doing. But and again, it's not helpful when you hear, oh, gosh, the creche or the childcare or wherever they are, they're not seeing any of this. And but our children do that, don't they? They'll eat all the food for them as well. They'll follow instructions. But we're the safe base. So all of the little microaggressions or frustrations he's carrying from his day in creche, he's bringing that home to you. So I'm also wondering, when these intense outbursts occur, might it be at the end of a long day for him? Might he be really tired, overwhelmed, overwrought? You know, what is he left holding? So maybe a run around, if you have a garden or if you live near a shared green space, getting outside and a bit of that before you come home from creche, even 10, 15 minutes of that, playing chasing and rolling, that could actually pay off hugely compared to those little flashes that you're going to get then when you get home. I would talk to the creche about how they observe his sharing and his turn taking, but do hold in mind it will be different for them because he doesn't own any of their toys, whereas he does at home. So sharing at home is always different to sharing in a communal space that creche would be. But practice time in. I think you are doing it actually mostly. You know, separate him from the action, whatever's happening. Stay with him. If he will let you put him on your lap, do some rocking, swaying, humming, just that kind of lullaby-esque tone that is rhythmic and soothing for him. Actions, not words. And I would never at this age have been without a bottle of bubbles. Now, I don't mean the adult drinking bubbles. I mean the other bubbles, just to be very clear. I would have had them in handbags, the glove box of the car, pockets, you know, like little party bag bubbles. And when it's all kicking off, you sit there and blow bubbles. It's good for you for regulation because you have to take a deep breath in and exhale out. And bubbles are really distracting for children. It really engages them at this age and it might pull him out of what he's doing over to you. And you can have him clap the bubbles, pop them with his pointer, stamp on them with his feet and get some movement in.
Yeah. And the idea of speaking to them afterwards when they're calmer, when he's still only three,
no.
Is there much? No?
No, you don't, no. That's like the radiator on and the window open. Okay. That's not landing. It's really not. I think it's no harm that we get kind of the practice, but really what he's looking for is you, your tone, your movements. If you've got them co-regulated, just redirect them into something you do want them to be doing and then job done. Leave it at that.
Right. My seven-year-old has been having a really bad time health-wise since March. This seems to have knocked her and she has some subconscious anxiety. She's now having crying episodes, never seems to know why she's crying. They're happening at school, at home, etc. with no trigger. She says she feels sad and doesn't know why. She's mentioned worries about death at other times and is very clingy. Please answer this question for me, says very worried mammy.
Yeah, very worried mommy of a very worried little girl, you know, that, you know, and be aware of that because, you know, Sean, like when our children are sick, we feel that as parents as well. And if she's had rolling illness, and I don't know how bad the health situation, like what are we talking about? But even if it's at mild to moderate level, but it's been rolling and repeated for months, that's exhausting, that's draining, and that is worrisome. So as a parent, you're also holding this. And I think this is a good place to start, is really check in with yourself. And what I mean by that is not go, yes, yes, I'm worried, and verbally reason yourself out, but really check in. Where do I hold that worry? Where am I feeling it now? Are my shoulders stiff? Is my back stiff? Am I tight in the chest? Do I have a knot in my tummy? Like, where am I holding that stress? And that's a really good insight and place to start, because health anxiety is a real thing, even for children. And particularly where there's context where she's had a run of bad health. And that means bad health means a lot of doctor trips. That means a lot of intervention or somebody, I don't know, examining you or pushing your tummy or whatever it might be. And our bodies do encode, well, we know our bodies encode trauma. I don't want to say this is trauma, but our bodies encode trauma, but it also encodes distressing experiences. And the distress of illness would be encoded in the body. So she may be holding it at an invisible level, you know, that kind of implicit, invisible holding. So when she says, I don't know why I'm crying, and you say there's no trigger, what you're saying is there's no obvious overt, visible trigger. But there is a trigger. It's coming from deep within her. It's whatever she's holding, the leftover, the emotional residue of all of that anxiety and worry of being unwell. And I think, and of course, she's only 7. We wouldn't expect her to kind of, well, let's interweave all of those feelings with a story and tell us about it. But in lots of ways, without doing that, it is always held implicitly in our bodies. And that's our bodies will tell that story for us. So, I mean, it could be worth, and, you know, it, again, depending on what the health situation has been, you know, Children in Hospital Ireland are a really good service and they're a really good resource for children who've had to or are having to spend time in hospital for treatment. And they have hospital play specialists. So something like that, or, you know, if it's not at that level, even a brief amount of play therapy, non-directive play therapy with somebody who can just afford her that space to come in without questions, without any probing, and just let her work through what she doesn't have the words to express through symbolic play. That can be very helpful and transformative with something like this. And hold that in mind. And because it's the summer, you know, it's they're awaiting this for people anyway, but the summer is a tricky time to get started with therapy because a lot of people take breaks. But at home, I would say increase sensory play, like slime, Play-Doh, messy tactile play. And if that's making your skin itch thinking about it, just look at ways that you can contain it. You can wrap the table in a bin bag, for example. You can put down bath towels, but a lot of messy play. I have a couple of examples of this on short little videos on my social media that would be much easier to look at than try and verbally describe. So those are there for sensory play, but also try body movement. Think about dancing, swaying, chasing, spinning round and round, moving her body in lots of different ways, because that in itself is a sensory experience, but rhythm and synchrony will activate the parts of our brain that we rely on for regulation. So getting back into sync and back into connection. I think a lot of play like that over the summer at home. Don't keep talking about something, but do give her space and consider some play therapy here.
Right, yes. But in time, it'll pass.
It should do. I mean, it is, you know, that's going on since March. So if the health stuff has stabilized, you should then see a stabilization of this. But just give her that opportunity. But you can do a lot at home, Sean, like a lot, like sensory play isn't just, oh, yeah, well, we'll do a bit of that. If you do like a 15 minutes of that, 30 minutes of that every single day over the summer, it's the cumulative repetitive piece that's going to build up. They can do a lot to help her work through those held on tensions at home through play.
Right. Next question. Now, this is quite a long question, though. So we have edited it down to be read on the radio. But Joanna has seen the entire thing. My eldest daughter is nearly 6 years old. She has a 3-year-old brother and a 1-year-old sister. And she's recently noticed a new freckle on one side of her face near her mouth. She has otherwise very clear skin, which is sallow. And this freckle, which is tiny, is in isolation. Over the last 2 weeks, she's noticed the freckle and has become very self-conscious about it. I've been trying to not draw attention to the issue, but the other day she refused to leave the house for school, so ended up giving her concealer and said that just today she can use that. Then this morning, going to school, as we walked past 2 teenage girls en route to school, she held a finger over the freckle to hide it as we passed them. I was shocked and told her the freckle was a speck and that no one can see it. Then I decided to just ignore what happened and keep going to school. In previous conversations about it, I have told her that she is lucky to look the way she does and has a beautiful face, which others would be envious of. Over the past year, she often asks, "Do I look beautiful?" And there's a lot more there as well, where it does seem to be an issue with appearance for her.
It does. And I totally get where this parent's coming from and saying, you know, others would be envious of how you look. But that in itself is introducing comparison. And I think especially with young children, now we can't stop our children comparing themselves to others, Sean, like we think we can, you know, I don't do it at home, all of that. Children will do that really naturally, just as all adults do. And we do live in an increasingly comparison focused culture. But just be very mindful of how we speak to children this age should be very much about what their bodies can do and never really what their bodies look like. So it's not you look pretty. It's, you know, those look like strong legs. I wonder how high you can jump. Those kinds of statements. Things like freckles. Now, I am not a skin specialist or a dermatologist, but I do just want, when just when something appears suddenly, people can panic. Oh my gosh, is it a freckle? Like a new freckle, and a freckle being something that is flat, a brown dot appearing, it's usually quite typical. It's usually very normal and due to sun exposure. But, you know, I do want to flag, watch anyone else listening, watch for changes to things like freckles in case it's a mole. And you'd always watch for changes. And there is a system, again, you know, where you look for the base of it, the color, the size of it. Is it raised? Things like that. And, you know, I know this little girl, you know, in the letter had said, you know, she doesn't want to wear SPF anymore on her face because if there's one freckle, there should be two to match it. But actually, yes, please, everyone wear SPF on your face, even if it's not very sunny. That's something you want to talk to her about, is taking care of her skin, not again what she looks like or how others would think or feel about what she looks like. I do think there's something here in the "Do I look beautiful" stuff that's in this, the letter, and the more detailed version of the letter. Overall, she does sound like a typically developing little six-year-old girl. She does seem to be having a confidence wobble, because it's not just the freckle. There's a couple of other examples in that letter. And I'm wondering if those parents have noticed a change in her self-esteem recently. Like, might something have happened? Might something have been said? Anything like that? Or perhaps she's always shown some degree of this heightened self-consciousness. How might others perceive her? How might others look at her? And I do think, you know, children who are accustomed perhaps to getting a lot of positive affirmation about how they look, oh, you're so pretty, or you're so this, or whatever it might be, that can put a high emotional charge around the body from a young age. And then that can play out when there's changes. For example, when children start to lose their teeth, I often hear about this, you know, oh, I don't want to smile anymore because I have gaps in my teeth. Things like, we think, you know, some kids are delighted to be losing their teeth and that, you know, the exchange they get with the tooth fairy for that. But other kids do begin to go, my body is changing. And that's something to be mindful of here, because her body is going to be changing, and that's going to be part of an ongoing process. I think I would really work on building self-esteem, confidence, and a belief in what the body can do, and removing any emotional charge from what it looks like. Bodies Are Cool, Tyler Federer, I've mentioned that book a number of times. It does really talk about bodies in that way, about what bodies can do, but it also emphasizes that bodies come in all different shapes, sizes, abilities, colors, you know, and different appearances, and that all bodies are cool. So that can be a helpful one to frame a discussion or conversation you're going to have with her. I think for self-esteem, help her find her passion, something that she's really interested in, and something she's interested in. She doesn't necessarily have to be good at it, but just interested in it. Practice independence through chores or going into shops, ordering for herself, speaking for herself. Always emphasize effort over outcome, regardless of how something goes with her. And really watch how you talk about your own body, because this could be someone going, gosh, I would never talk to her about what her body looks like. But maybe she hears you talking about your own body. Now, I'm only saying maybe, but we have to be really mindful that our children are always watching and listening. And if we tend to talk about, oh, my skin this, or oh, goodness, my tummy that, or whatever it might be, they're listening to that narrative as well. There are, you know, other organizations as resources around this going forward as well. I think the Shona Project, Tammy Darcy's Shona Project, do tremendous work in this area. Shona.ie is well worth a look in terms of confidence, self-esteem, and really celebrating role models for girls as well. So that could also be something to begin to look at as a parent, and really integrate that into your parenting narrative with her.
God, it's shocking though that, yeah. And maybe something was said to her, but it just seems like that culture is already having an effect on a six-year-old child.
Absolutely. And it is something we have to be mindful of. And even like if you think it's not coming from your home, be aware our children go to school and they're exposed to other children, and we can't be there, nor are we supposed to be, to shield them from comments of other kids or other people out in the world. So, the exposure once they go to school, school is beyond the sanctity of our home. It is the world at large. And so we do need to have these conversations proactively so that they can withstand commentary. I think it's awful, by the way, that they have to, but they do. So be really mindful about what she is seeing or hearing at home, and then make sure she can talk through with you anything she might hear in school. She's six, so she's, you know, I'm thinking what, junior, senior infants, that type of age. And, you know, she's learning about being around other children, but dealing with little microaggressions as well. And the whole attempt that I just want to fit in, that's already beginning at that age.
My word. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. That was Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.